Welcome back to episode 307. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Well, a number of things to cover this week. There was this in Michigan. We had this the law that was passed. Apparently, the Governor Gretchen Whitmer signed a law banning conversion therapy for licensed professionals, I guess. I guess if you're not licensed, you can still do it. But anyway, she said, that Michigan law becomes the 22nd state to outlaw the practice of conversion therapy, which state lawmakers define as any practice or treatment by a mental health professional that seeks to change an individual's sexual orientation or gender identity. I don't know. Does that count for like grooming in public schools? Huh? It's like, that does not include counseling that provides assistance to people undergoing gender transition. Well, whatever that means. Gretchen Whitmer said, "Today we are banning a horrific practice of conversion therapy in Michigan and ensuring this is a state where you can be who you are." So, how is it being who you are by pretending to be something you're objectively not?
Yeah,
And
exactly. And the
horrific.
yeah, I mean the statement, we are banning the horrific practice of conversion therapy. And so this is obviously propaganda. She doesn't have the courage or the desire to open up an actual discussion, which you would think would be natural because it is just such an obvious kind of gray area that someone has come up with the idea that they are of the opposite sex in terms of their soul, in terms of their who they are uniquely. And so she makes the statement, you can be who you are, but she doesn't mention that this in fact, in terms of sexual gender, is something that many people see as fluid, right? This has been one of the kind of sexually degenerate ideas that have been floated around. But the other concern is that it's transitory, right? You have like stages in a young child's life, where they might see think of it be advantageous to be of the opposite sex. And so she defines it as who you are, period. As if the determination to have the opposite sex gender than you were born with is completely outside of any kind of analytic criticism, right? It's just absolutely set in stone. And I mentioned before that I know a urologist who was involved with the analysis of potential transgenders in Charleston, and he told me that of the thousand, that's his estimate, that he had been involved in the process, only three actually made the transition. And he said in each case it was after the fact, he thought it was a bad idea. But there, you have that reality in terms of, the idea that, who you are is something different than your actual chromosomal gender is. In just this is only, I think he retired like 15 years ago. So imagine just 15 years ago, three of a thousand would be, go through the process and there'd be counseling and therapy and whatnot, and they would reach the other side and the decision would be made to go forward. Whereas now I am sure it's inverted. I talked to someone who has an understanding of this, and she told me that she doesn't think that anyone in California who has come forward with the idea that they want to transition has not begun the process. So we are in this world where the propaganda is in the language of the statement by the governors, and they are not opening it up to any kind of discussion. There's no concern or that this is just a transitory position in this individual and it's gonna end very quickly. And so what you can see is that it is if this is an agenda, and that the people who are being, put into the transition process are basically being sacrificed for this. I don't know how you would call it other than satanic maneuver. I mean, certainly, Whitmer's statement is kind of a satanic inversion, of what is, would be a normal, everyday understanding of
Well,
something with a transition.
how is it horrific to counsel a person to act in accordance with his anatomy or
Exactly.
nature? I mean,
Yeah.
why is it considered a conversion to attempt to persuade a, be it a biological female or biological female male to behave in accordance with their biology? It's not conversion. You're just simply being in correspondence with reality. But at the same time, it's perfectly legal in Michigan to exploit mentally ill people, even children, by subjecting them to, this ghoulish cross-sex hormone therapy and even physical, mutilation, surgical mutilation. They call it surgery. It really is just mutilization, so they can pretend to be something they're objectively not. Of course, this is a state where the Attorney General, Dana Nessel, celebrates that the fact that drag queens have access to children. So the state promotes the grooming and sexual molestation of children. So this is why perhaps so many kids are having this confusion, because it's being promoted.
Yeah.
So again, it is a satanic version of this language of where horrific. I mean, it's like they're not mutilating the person, not poisoning them with hormone therapies. They're simply trying to talk to the person and through this stage of confusion with a certain basis in reality, biological reality, and I would suspect it, a moral basis. There's a morality issue here, of sexual morality, which the Governor Whitmer and her government completely rejects, completely inverts. As if it's somehow presumed that it's okay to encourage kids to live, to engage in sexual, degenerate immoral behavior,
Yeah, and
whether.
to claim that she knows, Governor Whitmer
Yes.
knows who you are.
Yes.
Like, in other words, she's claiming that myself and the state know who you are, and we know you are not the gender that your chromosomes indicate. We know this. This is the, they are like, they're really setting themselves up as human gods,
Yeah, I mean,
like.
how is it horrific to tell someone not to act out their disordered passions or sexuality to get it back to normal? That's like, I mean, okay, you have an opinion, but why you and they're passing a law against it? That suggests that it's somewhat effective. Well, otherwise, they wouldn't be compelled to pass a law to prevent it. They're being frustrated by people, by I guess good people of goodwill trying to correct this person's problems before they live a completely sterile, dissolute,
Yeah,
meaningless life that leads, ends in in suicide, and in
right.
more than
And if you
half the
just think of it
cases.
as part of like an analytic structure, what she's doing is trying to shut off discussion, right? The conversion therapy would be a discussion between whoever is providing it and the individual who's at question, and there would be a discussion concerning, maybe some of the points being that it's not a good idea.
Well, it's, they're not converting anything. The point
This is the inversion, exactly,
I mean,
where they are saying they're describing the therapist who is trying to talk the person out of having the hormone therapy as a conversion therapy
the
practice.
person's sexual confusion or moral confusion is simply a category. It's not a category of reality. It's a category of the mind, meaning homosexuality, transsexuality. It doesn't exist really any more than gluttonism or lustism exists, meaning identifying by your disordered appetites or your behavior, that's your identity. No, it doesn't really exist. These are people who choose to identify based on their behavior, but it doesn't mean what it's what they are. It's how they're behaving. So again, it's this confusion. In the past, I remember I thought it was referred to as reparative therapy, like repairing something. I think they chose conversion. This is the same reason why they chose gender over sex. It's a trick of the language where calling it conversion therapy concedes the argument to them. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
There are the ones making the radical change with the cross-sex hormone therapy and physical sibling, mutilating the genitals or removing the breasts and putting in cheekbone implants and these things to create a fantasy that you're the opposite sex. I mean, it's
Yeah,
they're the
and
ones doing it.
they're doing this because they want to make it impossible for there to be any discussion. Because, frankly, they know they can't have a debate on this issue, nor can they have basically a debate over any one individual. They just could not do it. They would lose. It would be self-evident if they were up against someone who was of equal skill in talking, that they are the ones doing the conversion, and that there's every reason in the world to try to keep this individual within their chromosomal gender, right? Certainly stronger reasons to try to do that than the opposite. So they would lose this, and that would slow down the agenda that they have. And so they are doing two things here with Whitmer's statement. One, they are ending discussion, and two, they're just creating intimidation and propaganda because the horrific practice, she calls it the horrific practice. The idea of trying to talk someone into staying with his chromosomes rather than going through surgery and hormone therapy. So, again, we are in a world where the political class are members of a secret society. And a statement like Whitmer's may seem as though it's coming from simply a crazy person, but it is not. It's coming from someone who is trained and who has been vetted. Her language is carefully chosen. And this is the propaganda that is trying to take us to genocide. And remember, always remember that when you switch chromosomes, when you switch the gender from your chromosomal basis, you are out of the like a breeding process. No more children's going to come out of that individual. So it's a sterilization, as well as something that is, just something that puts processes inside of you which are against the natural one and will obviously lead to diminished health downstream.
There was a in Illinois that J.B. Pritzker, the governor, signed a law Thursday that threatens crisis pregnancy centers with up to a $50,000 fine if they spread, quote, misinformation. Again, there's that word. Senate Bill 1909, which the state legislature passed in May, prohibits pregnancy resource centers from using deceptive acts to advertise their service to women in an attempt to lead them away from getting an abortion. Pregnancy resource centers that do not offer abortions or abortion referrals can be fined a civil penalty up to $50,000 for deception aimed at preventing women from seeking or obtaining abortions or emergency contraceptives, which are really just abortifacients. They're not really contraceptives. They disrupt or an egg that's already been fertilized, but they call them emergency contraceptives. This would be like the morning after pill, I guess. A limited service pregnancy centers shall not engage in unfair methods of competition or unfair or deceptive acts or practices, including the use of employment or any deception, fraud, false pretense, false promise, or misrepresentation, or concealment, suppression, or omission of the material fact the law states. Very vague language. It depends on who's enforcing it. The law further prohibits pregnancy centers from using deceptive practices to induce an individual to enter and access a limited service pregnancy center. I guess that would be a pregnancy center which doesn't offer abortion services. Again, if you're.
Oh, for example, it'd be like a Christian-oriented.
Yeah, well, most of the places are religious oriented, yes. And everyone, and most people know
Well,
that going into it.
we would encourage you to do this. I would really like to see a few citations. This law is simply, again, it's intimidation, it's propaganda. It is not addressed against any kind of activity in the real world. I mean, there just isn't, evil. Deceptive, lying, misinformation being given to women who are pregnant that like these Christian-oriented centers would be trying to talk about having an abortion. So they should be forced to come up with some citations to say,
Yeah,
okay,
this, yeah, where someone's been deceived. And what if you've been,
what was said to
my point
who?
is if you're deceived, just okay, I want an abort, I'll go down the street to the abortion clinic.
Sure.
These crisis pregnancy centers are not disrupting the operations of those clinics that offer abortion services. So if somebody says, "Oh, you're not offering abortion," no, thank you. I'll go get the abortion. What they're afraid of is these women are going to be talked out of killing the unborn child, their unborn children. I'm like, what? How are they being wrong? Where's the fraud? They're not being charged for an abortion, not getting one. I mean, it's like, and who decides what misinformation is? I mean, telling an expecting mother that killing the unborn child is not murder, isn't that misinformation? Are they deceiving her? Performing, and they call these, these services don't offer comprehensive reproductive care because they're crisis pregnancy centers. Sorry, is reproductive care providing an abortion? How is an abortion reproductive? It's preventing reproduction. So who's deceiving here? I mean, it's
deceiving, right? Yeah, good point.
But well, but I mean, here it is. I mean, obviously, I mean, God forbid that women be persuaded not to kill their unborn children. Oh, the horror! I mean, I suppose, you know, again, to call an abortion mill a women's health clinic or the murder of unborn child reproductive freedom, isn't that deceptive? Is that misinformation? And of course, we can't forget the Illinois State Capitol building. Last Christmas, hosted a display of baby Baphomet last year in the state capitol, you know, and
no one was encouraged to abort baby Baphomet.
Yeah, it's baby Baphomet, yes. You know, and of course J.B. Pritzker, he's the scion of the uber wealthy Jewish Pritzker banking family, who devote a not insignificant portion of their ill-gotten wealth to promote transgenderism. But I suppose it's not misleading to promote the idea that people can transition to the opposite sex simply by putting on a dress or mutilating their genitals. But this is the world we live in. So.
You remember, I've been talking about the diminishing return moments and how one of the characteristics of it is absolutely have to shut down discussion and debate. 60s, 70s, 80s, there was constant political debate on television. And then the newspapers, you know, you'd have to and fro. That's over with. Mm-hmm. Now the media must stay on message and use the language of intimidation to stop discussion, because they're at the point in the project where what they're doing is so obviously satanic and evil that they cannot talk about it. They can't have a discussion. They have to use expressions like the conversion therapy as the that would be the person who would be trying to get someone not to do the conversion of their natural sexuality. So you're really, and I said, no, you're not going to see, you know, the vaccine debated or the lockdowns debated. I mean, we really are at the moment where the secret society has to stop the any kind of debate whatsoever, because they're not just going to lose the debate. They're going to actively create more opponents to their agenda. Because the debate now on almost every single thing, you know, is going to create more opponents than followers. They have to keep going with this kind of stuff because they just want to keep the sheep that exist, the vaccinated, in the pen, no thought process going on. They just want to keep them as docile as they can while they maneuver them off the planet.
Yeah, you think when the governor comes out and says, calls it horrific, a reporter would go, "Governor, you're calling conversion therapy horrific, or what about the surgery that people undergo?
Right.
The mutilation of their bodies. Should I get in the particulars of what it involves when you're trying to turn a penis into a vagina? I mean, let's get in the particulars of this." I mean, oh, no, she doesn't get any questions like that.
How many of the 40%, Governor, who are autistic are able to make the kind of decision that will be with them for the rest of their lives?
See, it's not a question of that.
Mentally qualified right now at the age of 10 and autistic to make that decision.
You're not supposed to ask why there's so many autistic children. You're supposed to celebrate the neural diversity. And if you, right. and if you look askance at their condition or why there's so many more of them who are diagnosed with autism, who are dysfunctional, you're discriminating against them the same way that if you lament these poor individuals, these mentally ill people who think they're, the opposite sex, you are denying this community their rights. You're oppressing them as opposed to pointing out the fact that these are victims of a satanic system that's ruining these people's lives.
But they can't discuss it, because to do so would be to open a can of worms. But the problem is, it's all a can of worms at this point. They have maneuvered themselves into this sort of satanic matrix where they have to go forward with the agenda because the independent media is bringing out too much negation of and exposure. But they're at the point where, it isn't like trying to create a hippie, right? I mean, that is something that there could at least be discussion regarding. He's exiting kind of European Christian culture, and the sex, drugs, and rock and roll might take his life sideways. But you could talk about it. But no, that was the hippie. The transgender, that it is taboo. It cannot be
Well, at
discussed.
least the hippie, if he doesn't kill himself with drugs, will eventually turn 30 years old and possibly grow up.
Yeah,
Where, I mean, there's no return from this.
for example. But see, that was then. But now, when they're at this point, they have to shut down discussion. So, they have the power of the intimidating expressions, Holocaust denier, conspiracy theorist, anti-Semitic, horrific practice of conversion therapy. But it's all obviously it's sophistry and it's propaganda. It's crude. It's really not, let's face it. Do you think Whitmore with her statement is gonna actually intimidate anyone into believing, that?
Well, like I said, professional, so I guess you go to the amateur to get help, right? Because these things aren't. A lot of these laws, even the law in Michigan, these are just obviously unconstitutional because they go after things like free speech, and these are obviously you're not dealing with fraud, you're dealing with providing a certain service, and they're trying to use that law to, again, to shut it down, and you're violating free speech here.
I think there's a chance that the whole transgender agenda could really blow up. Looking at the Bud Light, the boycott, how successful it's been, and Target, this is an issue that the public is not ready to swallow. So they're going to be forcing it down their throat, but this could really lead to some very, very highly energetic, skeptical individuals exposing this as as being foisted on the public for the purpose of genocide and creating degenerate sex slaves. This issue has legs, I think, as far as the independent media.
Now, you saw the recent, I guess, dust up over slavery. Apparently, slavery is still an issue in the United States. A new curriculum for African American history, approved by the Florida Board of Education, includes a lesson that teaches slavery had personal benefits. Now, of course, this is the report I'm reading here, which is that's sort of a misrepresentation. The board unanimously approved the education program at a Wednesday meeting in Orlando after a tense, more than hour-long period of public comment, the Tallahassee Democrat reported. While the goals of the public middle school teaching can include the history and evolution of slave codes, a proposed lesson also seeks to instructors to show students how slaves develop skills, which in some instances could be applied for their personal benefit. I think what made a big issue about this was Kamala Harris stepping in and accusing the curriculum and thereby going after Governor DeSantis, who is a presidential candidate, for approving the curriculum, claiming that slavery had personal benefits, and therefore saying, and therefore implying, really, she's inferring that they're trying to say that slavery was a good thing on balance, and that the all the blacks in America should say thank you to America for bringing them here. So it's one of these things. Obviously, she didn't read the entire curriculum. She's stupid and she's deceptive and doesn't matter really. This is just another chance to sort of stoke up racial animosity and division. Created a political issue where there really wasn't much of a political issue about, obviously with slavery, you have these African American study programs. This is all part of DeSantis' attempt to reverse things like critical race theory. This is, he's positioning himself on the right. So he's gone after some of these things in Florida. The so-called Don't Say Gay Bill really was the Parental Education Rights Act or something to restrict a lot of this woke stuff and diversity, equity, inclusion stuff and again, the critical race theory stuff, which is anti-white, and And so that's why this was passed in Florida. If you read the entire curriculum, which was developed by several black scholars and historians, it's very balanced. I've read through it. It's like, okay, it's kind of like what you'd expect, sort of a pretty balanced treatment of the history of slavery in the United States and also around the world, for that matter. And this may shock some people, but the United States wasn't the only country in the world or civilization that had the institution of slavery. In fact, Western countries, I think, hold the distinction of the only civilizations that actually abolished slavery. And it still persists, like in Asia and Africa, which no one seems to care about. So it's one of these things that's just there. It's a wound that politicians, particularly on the left, want to continually scratch and never heal it, because it can be used for political benefit to divide and conquer the American people.
Harris is just so stupid. In fact, I think she's the only politician that I've ever experienced, as you know, in my life, that is actually dumber than Biden. I mean, it's unbelievable.
How
I mean,
about Fetter, how about Fetterman? But
she didn't understand what she was saying.
no.
She did not understand which I perhaps some person wrote it or gave it to her. But why would they attack DeSantis at this point? His campaign is crumbling. There's very little enthusiasm for him, and it's wasting, I think a kind of a snarky moment to go after him at this point. It just seems ridiculous. Why waste the time? I mean, I think obviously Trump will be the nominee. Don't you agree that he seems like he's going to, we're going to have a there'll be some Democratic contender. It'll be interesting to see who that is. Kennedy, very disappointing, but I mean, hardly unexpected. He really kowtowed to Israel and Jewish interests this week. A couple, videos came out of him, talking about how important it was to get rid of anti-Semitism and things. So, the longer you get away from the vaccine as a critical issue in people's minds, the less chance I think Kennedy has of connecting. And so the question is who will the Democrats bring forward? It's just beyond belief that they would run Biden again. I mean, that's just I mean, it's un inconceivable. So, Trump versus question mark. But Harris's comment was, it just said more about her than it certainly did about DeSantis and slavery. I kind of I don't know about you. I get the feeling that it's less and less of a cutting issue.
150 years after it was
Yeah, I
abolished.
kind of think it's.
There
I
was
mean,
something
I
called
hate
the 13th Amendment.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think they can bring it up and try to run on it again, but no, I just don't think many people are going to pay attention to it. So
Well, it's a
it just
legacy of slavery. That's why you have all this,
there's always a legacy.
the legacy that never ends is reparations, which never end. They never end for World War II for the Jews, right? For Germany keeps paying up.
God, they never
Never
do.
ends. And but again, if you subsidize something, you get more of it. So you get more Holocaust victims if you pay out reparations. The same thing with slavery. You get more. Everyone is going to be a descendant of a slave. No one's going to be a descendant of a slave owner, half of which the blacks are, by the way, in this country. They're descended from slave owners as much as they are from slaves genetically. I mean, it's like, I think only 12%, I think, of the ethnic white population of the United States is actually can be traced back to slave owners. There was very few people who owned slaves in the United States. And many of those who did were Jewish, at least engaged in the slave trade. It was a primarily Jewish operation.
And
So
Masonic, yeah, Jews and Masons were certainly, I think,
I
the
think that
majority.
this, yeah, and the slave trading, it didn't trade on Jewish holidays. It was so Jewish
Right,
dominated.
that's right. That was
Yeah.
they were such.
That's not talked about, though. It's a
Right.
white thing. It's a white guy. They blame the white guy because it's the white guy thing. But what it does show is, again, is when he talks about the benefits from slavery. Now, this is interesting. I could take the old, the Monty Python Life of Brian scene. I can sort of paraphrase or build upon it. And what did the white man ever do for us? It's, yeah. What did the white man ever do for us? Is, well, he, how about, I don't know, literacy? Okay, literacy. Other than literacy, what did the white man ever do for us? I don't know. How about public sanitation? Okay, public sanitation literacy. What did the white men ever do for us? How about just the political vocabulary to even come up with the ideas of personal liberty, thereby which we can criticize slavery? Because it was only in the West, right? It was ever even questioned, you know? So, well, what did the white do for us? I don't know, an introduction into modern life and these things. And you could
Well,
take
yeah,
that,
and
you
how
know,
about
my point being is if you, from a strictly material analysis, slaves did materially benefit from slavery because they had a much higher standard of living in the United States than their cousins back in Africa, who sold them off to the white slave traders, by the way, the King of Dahomey and these things, these slave kingdoms, you know, and the slaves that went west were much more fortunate than the slaves that went east, to where Arabs traded them, where they often they would castrate them. This is why slavery, United States, one of the reasons why slavery could the international slave trade could be ended in 1807 or somewhere abouts, is because slaves reproduced so prodigiously in the United States. It was much
Right.
harsher in South America, from what I understand. So, although slavery inhumane, it was how it was practiced in the United States was much more humane than anywhere else in the world. That's just a fact. It's not justification. And it is true they did develop skills, whether it's literacy, which they didn't have, or these basic industrial skills like blacksmith and agriculture that they did utilize after their manumission, after their emancipation. And many slaves were able to develop skills, earn money, and actually buy their freedom. They're, yeah, and subsequently buy slaves. This is just what it was. What we do is because everyone wants to overemphasize the inhumanity, you know, the brutality of it, because that's all part of the grift, today's grift, because everyone wants to be a victim. So they had this cartoonish idea of what slavery was, a sort of this
Well,
Quentin Tarantino.
balance. Yeah, it's not balanced. In other words, all of the attributes that you listed are correct. Those were
Yes.
parts of the slave's experience. But there was also, gross, inhuman, beatings and things,
Yes, all of that. But my point being is that you got to be in balance.
that's the only part that's ever presented
Yes.
to the public is the part of it that is useful propaganda, the pictures of, blacks with the whip scars
Well,
and things
here's an
like
example. Is it in the Civil War, you know, the documentary by Burns?
that.
There's a photograph of a black man with a scarred back. The presumption is that he was whipped. Actually, he was injured in an accident. It was, I believe it was like something, a boiler blew up or something. Wasn't even whipped. Okay. So this is the type of misrepresentation that you get, you know. So the point being is it's highly exaggerated. I mean, in the 1930s, during the Great Depression, the Franklin Delano Roosevelt administration, part of the New Deal, had one of these alphabet soup programs where they paid journalists to go to the South to interview surviving slaves. That there were still a few around in early 1930s, elderly. And they wanted to get their take on slavery, and they expected to get this thing was horrible. You know, it was something out of Uncle Tom's Cabin and constant whipping and all that. But they found that most of the slaves looked nostalgically back on the antebellum South and their life. Now you could mark that up to nostalgia, their youth, and these things. But they said life was pretty good, and
Yeah,
this is something
and
that's really this is something
that
that's
part of
hard to
slavery is
people.
never presented, is never presented, and people don't know about it. And to bring it up, will just create just an eruption of emotion
It's
and
not a justification for slavery. It's just an
right, of
acknowledgement
course
of the
not.
fact that this
We
is the
tried to
truth.
present a balanced image of what reality was.
And what about the cost of slavery? What for fact of the matter is that there were far more many white slaves than black slaves. Far more many whites are carried off from slavery by the Barbary pirates and ever were brought to the New World, by the way. That's not talked about. Not to mention the fact you have indentured servitude and the treatment of Irish indentured servants, and also cheap labor in America. Good example, and I think it was New Orleans Canal Street. They used Irish rather than Negro slaves because Negro slaves are too expensive, and Irish would just die. And they died like flies then doing
Yeah, of
that.
course.
That's
I mean,
Canal
the
Street.
whole Irish slavery
Yeah.
concept is never presented, but in a balanced presentation of slavery, it would be. And in a balanced presentation, an honest one, just dissolves the propaganda power of the event, as does a balanced kind of understanding of the Holocaust diminish greatly the propaganda aspects. It's not to say it
Yeah.
didn't happen or there was not horrible things. But if you actually go into the details and the reality, then the propaganda energy disappears and it's not useful. I wanted to mention Muhammad Ali actually gave a position on slavery. He was in Riyadh, I believe, for the heavyweight championship fight with
Well, the
George Foreman.
rumble in the jungle, yes, that famous quote.
And they asked him, they said, "What do you think of Africa?" And he said, "I'm glad my ancestors got on the boat."
Yeah, I'm glad he said, I'm so happy my granddaddy was put on that boat. And
So
it's just a
it's
reality. It just, I mean, if you look at it now, I mean, it's just like, I know it's used as a grift, as a constant shakedown to talk, to make everyone feel guilty about it, even though most people are, again, there are no slave owners alive, nor are there any slaves alive surviving. So get over it, forget it, talk about it from historical thinking, debate. All these things we talk can be debated, how inhumane it was, how beneficial it was, because it was better. That's one of the ironies of history. People do benefit generationally from other people's misfortune. I mean, a good example is how many people came to the United States, Irish came to the United States, had a much higher standard of living than those in Ireland because of the misfortunes of the Irish in the 1830s and 40s at the hands of the British. They came to America for a new world, and they, in a way, benefited from it. It's just one of those things. I mean, it's just, it's not a justification for the imposed famine that the British did because you could benefit. I'm just acknowledging it.
Tim,
And
I've often thought that you should create a Patreon category for reparations
I want reparations
for
from the
yourself.
British, yes.
No, I
Yes.
mean, you say, Tim Kelly, descendant of indentured slaves, needs reparation, and so consider your donation, as part of a way of expunging guilt.
By the way, Kamala Harris, I think she's descended from slave owners. So
Of course she is.
it's like, and I'm not, by the way. So,
Right. No, you're just, yeah. So it's, again, this is another example. I mean, I hate to be a scratchy record, but they can't talk about anything. Everything is can of worms, and nothing is a worms that they can control. I mean, they're just,
well, what about the burden of slavery placed on the United States? Everyone says we benefited from it. Well, I don't know. I look at today, it's a hell of a price to pay for cheap cotton, Joe. I mean,
I
it's
don't think, I mean, I would really like to see the arithmetic behind that one.
well, they've done it actually. They do a one thing is that it significantly lowered wages for poorer whites in the United States. So basically you had a this is something anything this is not anything new. You're very wealthy people. Exploiting poorer people to keep the other poor people poorer, and so there's access to cheap labor. Otherwise, they would have had to pay higher wages for the work, and they couldn't have their profits would have been lower. So there's that. So you're elite exploiting the poor here, and again, and then you also have the introduction of a helot class in the United States that's going to be very difficult to assimilate or integrate, post emancipation, which it has been. You have that problem. Then you talk about reparations. What reparations? All the problems that blacks as a group create, crime being one of them, or welfare. The burden on the welfare state. None of the, they don't talk. I'm not. I'm just throwing it back at them. When they talk about reparations, okay, I want reparations. I want reparations to deal with all this nonsense. Where's my reparation? To deal with you, deal with
Well,
you people like this.
reparations, to me, it's sort of like athlete salaries. I mean, they're looking for ways to be able to insert large capital into African American communities and individuals as part of sort of the supersession, the transition
Yeah.
from the whites as the middle class and the blacks as lower middle class, and they want to invert that because that would help with the process of inbreeding and then creating the genetically indistinguishable clump of people with no ethnic backgrounds that'll be perfect to genocide. So I think that the reparation meme is it's real in the sense that it's possible. They could actually do that. I mean, affirmative action, when you think about it, is just another way of artificially creating revenue into the African American community, but at which they want to do, but only under certain conditions. Because notice that they've always destroyed honest sort of economic process by African Americans toward the middle class. When they had that one area which they refer to as the Black Wall Street. I mean, that was just literally burned down by the Masons. And then when you think about the the kind of the color revolution riots in the 60s, again, that was all to to stymie the progress that African Americans were making. And then the 1-2 punch was then they threw in the Great Society programs. So they have, on one hand, they want to debase that culture, but now on the other, they want to create revenue for it so that it can have power.
Well, maybe
And
we should give a black reparations for the Great Society for ruining your family.
well, there would be a legitimate, case to make reparations for the Great Society programs. I mean, what to do if you're young, like African American intellectual? The culture has been completely taken over, and it's defended by its victims.
Well, if they gave them reparations, everyone got like a $1 million check or something. That would simply go back in the pockets of Jewish creditors because they would go buy consumer products that are owned by corporations that are ultimately owned by BlackRock and Larry
Or yeah, and
Fink.
ultimately
So,
that's where it would go, but in the process they would destroy their culture even
yeah.
further
Well,
because
because it wouldn't foster industry or self-reliance, or it would foster further
exactly what
dependence.
when
That's
you
yeah.
have capital that doesn't come through some kind of acumen, what does it what is what happens? Well, you waste the money on frivolous things
Yeah, well, that's
and on destructive
yeah.
things.
Chappelle had a bit on that a little while back about reparations passing and blacks going out and like buying whole trucks of cigarettes and things, these consumer items, and starting rap labels and stuff like that. And it was like you're just and again because ultimately the wealth that we talk about come derives derived from human labor and ingenuity, not from money per se. So transferring money doesn't create that labor, industrial, quality labor, nor does it create the ingenuity or entrepreneurship. But in many cases, if it's a wealth transfer, it will just stifle and prevent whatever would develop otherwise. So that's not, again, it's one of these things where just you're gonna, they just want to check, and it's, and obviously you can see the grift and the cynicism behind it. And they want to continually play the victim. Of course, the media is there. And this is an old game where the Jewish controlled media will keep this going. Because it just further exasperates or aggravates race relations, which they benefit from. And at the same time, setting up a transfer scheme, which I think ultimately they'll benefit from, as I laid it out, as the
And
illustration.
listening to you talk, I mean, you can see that the only hope. We've talked about this 100 times, is the independent media at this point. I mean, if you are engaged in the other media or even in the political system, right, that they're offering us, these are cul-de-sacs. They lead nowhere but to destruction. Reparations, this is just, it's so obvious that they are trying to set up this meme as a way to create discord and to damage the culture even further, because the process of like justifying the reparations is always bringing out the picture of the black slave with the whip scars.
Yeah.
I mean, how is that like moving us toward a clear analytic position? These are just obvious propaganda moments, and it just it freezes the kind of it freezes the African American intellectually at a certain point, which is where just what they want, where they have a kind of sense of self-justification based on victimhood,
Well,
and
that's their
all,
identity, is that, yeah, they've
yeah,
been
and all
magic,
of the
yeah.
natural, kind of energies to try to do something on their own, is they're all, defeated. They try to keep that from starting up.
And it's just a further assault on white America, the white majority. That's with all the civil rights stuff. It's anti-white legislation or activism, and that you saw that recently with this controversy that was stirred up regarding that song. Try that in a small town. This
I know
Jason Aldean song. Yeah, it's a. I'm not a fan of country, even particularly newer country music. I find it kind of. I don't know, kind of vapid and uncreative these days. But that's music in general. But he wrote the song, Try That in a Small Town, where basically he's channeling the feelings of 100 million Americans. And I think it went up to number one on iTunes, and it's but then there was Country Music Television banned it because it was racist and promoting vigilantism, supposedly, because try that in a small town. And the song references obviously the George Floyd riots and these things, and that's considered racist, I guess, to acknowledge that these things ever occurred, and the idea that this wouldn't happen in a small town with this community. I don't know if that's true anymore. Nevertheless, I understand the sentiment. I mean, I think the McMichaels down in Georgia lived in a small town and they were railroaded. So it didn't help them. And you know, if you do something, if you do something about crime in a small town, or with Antifa or something, or Black Lives Matter, you might get the FBI coming in and raiding you or something, or imposing some sort of consent decree on your local sheriff's department or something, and to make sure your next sheriff is black or something. That's today's reality. But nevertheless, he did. The song does kind of tap a nerve, a nerve here about what's going on, and many Americans are very disturbed what's going on in this country. And it's kind of funny if when you have law, when you have a breakdown, law and order, you have chaos, and the police stand down, and what else can you do except engage in vigilantism? I call that self-defense, right? I mean, if the police are standing down and letting cities burn, which they did in 2020, what else can you do if you want to defend your property or defend your community? I mean, what choice do you
There's
have?
nothing you can do,
Right.
and you're right. The song was, something that really tapped into a nerve, and one that needs to be activated. I mean, what are people in small towns, going to do to stay in existence? With because they're all going to be swept up with the transgender memes and, kind of the racial hatred that's being, presented to whites, and by the supersession, they're going to be just financially just destroyed. So they have to organize, they have to fight back. It's all the only thing they can do. And I was really glad that, I mean, the song's just an absolutely terrible song, but
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. It's like,
country music is not one of America's great, cultural treasures, in my opinion, but nevertheless, it was really heartfelt, and it's good. I mean, you could kind of play this with the Bud Light commercial going on in the background, as just showing the juxtaposition of what actually the song is about, what it's really trying to prevent. So I think you're gonna, I mean, I hope that there's not just this song, but I hope there's 100 songs.
Well, you hear the lyrics. It does with the backup of videos of all the riots that we were told were mostly peaceful. Now, why? It's not vigilantism to, I guess, to burn down a police station or a courthouse or a store and loot, but it's vigilantism to try to prevent that from happening. But anyway, the song, the lyrics go: "Sucker punch somebody on a sidewalk, carjack an old lady at a red light. Pull a gun on the owner of a liquor store. You think it's cool? Well, act like a fool if you like. Cuss out a cop, spit in his face, stomp on the flag and light it up. Yeah, you think you're tough. Try that in a small town, see how far you make it down the road. Around here, we take care of our own. You cross that line, it won't take long for you to find out. I recommend you don't." Now, I wish it were that were the case. I don't think it is the case anymore. A lot of these small towns have been ruined with deindustrialization and the concentration of agriculture, the flooding of many small towns with immigrants from the third world to change the demographics, the flooding in of fentanyl into these communities to make up for the lack of employment. So I don't know if these communities exist anymore.
Very few do.
Jason Aldean said the song wasn't racist, but the type of community he's talking about requires a certain level of homogeneity. Ethnic homogeneity, so everyone does get along and have to share the same values, which breaks down along those lines. You flood these small towns with diversity, you get high crime, you get atomized communities, and so you don't have a sense of community. That's just a reality, you know.
I mean, I think you're right. The small town is more or less mythological at this point. There are a few, but I would say that the kind of town that he's describing is one that needs to be created. You have all of these people leaving the Soros DA zones, right? They're going out into the suburbs trying to find some place that they can put roots down, they should have that song playing.
Yeah.
You know, they should
Well,
try to.
again, a suburb is not a town. And to the extent that this song is aspirational, I cheer it, but it's I don't a lot of people read this, yeah, that's what a small towns aren't like that anymore. They've been ruined. You know, and they probably have a source DA that's been installed. Like what
Right.
happened to the McMichaels down in Georgia, you know. They
Well, a lot of
fought,
them do. I
you
mean,
know.
I agree. I think the small towns are mythologic. What the town that exists is sort of the internet created, counter culture of skeptics that, people like listen to our show. They're not really organized geographically. They're organized intellectually. The internet gives them the capacity to exchange information and to hear a media that they enjoy. But that is the town. That is the town. And that group, it would be good if, to the extent that they can, that they would at least, when they're leaving the Soros DA zones, to try to think about. You know, we actually. A couple of years ago, we had one of the listeners try to set up a, one of the like a bulletin board, to for people who listen to, if you want to get together to like fight off vaccine mandates, But I think that these kinds of communications are a really good idea, where people can, know that when they go to a town that there might be two or three at least other people of a like mind. And perhaps start some political connections, that they might then try to look at having some influence politically, because we really have to transition the skepticism and awareness that the internet skeptics have into political action. So that would be one way I could think of to start, having that happen.
Well, one thing is just got to kind of face the reality of the situation when it comes to things like crime. Jeff, I think Aldean claimed that his song had nothing to do with race, but if you watch the video that were in the video that I think he removed for copyright reasons, but now that he showed the black rioting, and of course it does have something to do with race because the vast majority of street crime that we see in this country is committed by blacks, black males particularly. So that's a reality. There's a color to crime. That's a reality that has to be dealt with. Now we can debate why that is, or why they're behaving the way they are. Is it the legacy of slavery and Jim Crow? Is it IQ? Is it family breakup and things? Nevertheless, it is what it is. And as the individual, the man who has to protect and provide for his family, can't be expected to sort through all that and get through daily life. But he just wants to get away from it. And that's this song is sort of a primal cry for that, but it is. I mean, the reality is race factors in crime, and there's all types of patterns that you recognize in these things. And ignoring it doesn't make it go away. In fact, it just makes it worse because you see where we heard for many years that there are too many black men in prison, and so they started releasing them. And then all of a sudden, crime shot up. Well, evidently there weren't enough of them in prison. And so it's one of these things where that you either have mass incarceration or low crime, or low incarceration, high crime. And the criminal justice system isn't there to sort the social problems. It only has to deal with it after the fact. But the problem is we're not getting anywhere by not dealing with the reality of the situation. And we have things like slavery being, like Kamala Harris talking about slavery, the oppression of blacks, has nothing to do with the current political problems or current social problems that we're dealing with. Effectively, it just obscures them, you know. And just what we get is just a hating whitey, blame whitey situation, which it goes as far back as I think it goes back to the civil rights era. Where people think there's a good civil rights era, and then it got corrupted. And it was always kind of bad because it upended the Constitution, did away with things like voluntary association, and it created an omnipresent, all-powerful federal government to police the various states on these matters. It didn't solve anything. It didn't solve the social problems. It just, as you said, the Great Society just made everything worse. And now we just have this overtly anti-white, which is really anti-America because pretty heritage America America's core ethnic group are ethnic white European Americans, and they define America. And you do away with them, you don't have America anymore, is what we're seeing. That's why America is dissolving now under this anti-white agenda that's been, been prosecuted for the past 60 years, ever since I think 1965, at least overtly, with the passage of Hart-Celler, which was passed to slowly erode the supermajority that existed at the time, even though those who wrote the law said they weren't going to do that. But it was there to introduce non-whites in the country to change the country's politics and culture. And it was, history of that is Jewish agitation to achieve that. And they got
Yeah,
it in
I
1965.
thought the song was really, I mean, I know this is maybe a little bit psychological of me, but I just thought that ultimately it was someone who missed the small towns in which heritage America, Christian Europeans have power and have community with one another. And that's been systematically taken away from us and for our destruction. I mean, in other words, this wasn't the Brave New World being assembled. This was, the woke genocidal death machine of the fentanyl brigade and the inner cities and
Well,
things.
now if you live in a small town, there's a good chance that your DA there is going to be selected by a Hungarian Jewish oligarch.
Yeah, very much.
It's like,
So really,
oh, small town. It's
what the
like,
song indicates is that we would like to have some political zones where we would have this kind of power, where we would be able to defend ourselves, and we wouldn't permit our police to be, subjected to, the violence of the Soros DA with their incarceration policies. I mean, I think more and more people are going to be kind of getting the song, because if you look at the inner cities. I was looking at some documentation about San Francisco. I mean, it is accelerating. All of the Soros-funded DAs are basically, these zones are in collapse. Chicago, they are. It's not going to stabilize. I think you're going to have more people leave and more violence, which will just, kind of ratchet up everything in a spiral. And so these are areas you're going to have to get out. And I mean, maybe just have the song playing in your RV as you head out to trying to get away from, the nightmare, and look for some place where that actually works. But I hope that in the small towns, of course they don't exist, but I just hope that the people who transition to there will bring this feeling, with them. And try to use it as, to energize themselves to have some political activity to create some self-defense,
Well, that's the thing, is what you're seeing in that expression. That song is an expression or an exertion of ethnic white agency, which is then pathologized, portrayed in the media as racist. So any exercise of ethnic white power is racist. Now that's quite a dilemma. That considering that white people are still the,
Yeah.
close to six, probably just over 60% of the population of citizens of the
That's what you
population.
call a double bind, Tim.
Yes, you're like, wait a second. So
Yeah.
now, any expression, at the same time, we're told that, the rioting, looting that we witnessed in 2020, that's all legitimate protests, mostly peaceful, these things, and although we're not seeing any examples of white people really exercising this power, there's a good example of this is double bind. We get it with the immigration and also the issue of the Great Replacement, where one time. We're told that the fact that white people will no longer be the majority of the country within a few decades, that is a good thing. But if you say that's the Great Replacement, then you're a paranoid conspiracy theory. It's not happening. So if you agree with the replacement white people, it is happening. It's good. If you don't agree with it and acknowledge it, then that's not happening. You're a racist, a conspiracy theorist.
Literally, that is just beautifully expressed. That is
Here's
exactly
a
double.
good example of this.
Yeah.
Rachel Maddow, who makes I think like
Yeah.
$30 million a year for like I think her show gets like 100,000 viewers a night or something. She's per viewer, she's I think the highest paid. Rachel Maddow, the Jewish lady on MSNBC, and she was lamenting. I think what happened was there was a Trump rally a couple of weeks ago, and some members of the National Justice Party showed up to distribute some leaflets about their platform. The National Justice Party is a white nationalist political party, an activist party. and they showed up to just distribute the stuff, and they were, well, they were received politely by the Trump people, by the Trump supporters, which Rachel Maddow was outraged by, because apparently you can't be polite in America. So they showed up and politely they came to the rally well dressed, politely handed out their leaflet and said, "Consider this," which is really, in a sane society, that's fine. And she, what happened, included in their platform is, I think the first plank in the platform is this: the United States of America will be declared an outpost of Western civilization and a state dedicated to its European heritage population and their posterity. It will be the policy of the state to set immigration and NATO policy that will ensure a permanent European majority. The rights of historic minority populations will be respected. Okay, she was outraged by this. This is racist, on, because they're calling for a permanent white majority. Well, wait a second. Why is that bad? First of all, I hear people advocate, or at least celebrate, the fact that given the demographic trends, that the white majority will be soon be a minority, and that's a good thing. Joe Biden said an unrelenting stream of brown people in the country, ensuring that the white majority will be a thing of the past, and that's a good thing, he said. We have people talk about the browning of America, how it's going to change the country's culture, its politics. It's inevitable, and it's a good thing. So what you're saying is the white majority is a bad thing. But if you, my point being is, why is a white majority a bad thing and not a good thing? Why is a non-white majority a good thing? The point is,
Well,
it's like,
naturally, I mean, I'm sure that because she's so logically consistent, that she, in the same paragraph, took on the state of Israel, right?
yes. Yeah. Well, here's the thing. The
I mean,
law, like
she
the
pointed out
natural.
that, well, we can't have this being a majority Jewish state because this would be
Well, I
racist.
know, yes, but yeah. But the thing is, in American law, the Naturalization Act of 1790 restricted granting citizenship to white persons of good character. That was the first immigration law. The 1924 Immigration Act shut the door on immigration for almost, I think, for 40 years, largely out of her demographic concerns. And even in 1965, the Hart-Celler Act, when they passed that, when they did away with the European quota system, they promised that would not change the country's demographics, i.e., it would not reduce the country's ethnic white supermajority. So there was concern even in 1965 about maintaining demographic stability and its importance to the integrity of the country and its culture and its preservation of its institutions. There was an acknowledgement of that in 1965. Of course, they didn't mean it, but they had to acknowledge it in 1965. Now they turn around and say that, no, that's racist. Says, wait a second. So my point is, if changing the country demographics to make it less white is a good thing, then you're anti-white. So why can't you reverse that and go, well, let's, I don't, and changing demographics that way is going to create or ensure a certain type of politics and culture changes the country, which I don't agree with. The only way to stop that is to reverse demographics and maintain an ethnic white majority. Then why isn't it considered perfectly acceptable and respectable and a defensible position to say, I want to maintain or reverse the country's demographics to ensure a white majority? I mean, you
Well,
can't
part of
celebrate the brown majority and say, I'm not, and criticize the white majority. At the same time, say that I'm celebrating a white majority and saying I want to keep a brown minority. Well, it's just basically, it's the same position. Why is one morally superior to the other? Just a question of whose interests are at stake here. It exposes the agenda here.
it exposes the agenda and also the irrationality that they have to use to sell it. Because just
Yes.
like you say, that you they can't analyze this, they can't engage in a discussion because they would just lose, you know, every time in the debate. And they would actually start, if they started talking about these issues, they would engender and emboldened their oppositions and the people that they want to
And
genocide.
why would Rachel Maddow and her co-ethnics want to promote a country increasingly diverse and heterogeneous, as opposed to a country that's more homogeneous? Well, because it creates a country that's heterogeneous and diverse is a country that's divided, which is easier to conquer and control. A good example would be the states of where this has been pulled off, like California, where an oligarchic class can rule over a dwindling middle class and a growing underclass that lack the agency, the and the 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 ability to challenge the system and pose some sort of political opposition to the oligarchic ruling class, which now presides over California. They want the same thing over the entire country, over the entire world. That's why they're doing the same thing in Europe, doing with ethnic nation states like Ireland, you know.
The thing is that they're doing this, well, to for supersession, and it's the same thing that was taking place in the Hungarian Soviet. There, when Lucsas was, they're creating a dictatorship and sexually degenerate education. It's really interesting when you think about the transition that we've made, the march through the institutions that Lucas and then the Frankfurt School created, because what he tried to do in Hungary is now coming about with the sexually degenerate pedagogy in our public schools. I mean, literally, the march through the institutions that they took ended up with the goal that they tried to hoist on Europeans. But at that time, the ethnic European Christians were too strong, and they were able to fight it off. But the thing about that process, what's interesting, is that even though it's the same group, and we've done 100 times, we've shown the threads of how it runs across the 100 years to this moment. But the language that was used, I mean, my point is that the language that they used back then was actually clear. Because when Lucas would write, he would write things like revolutionary destruction of society is the only solution, and nothing can save us from Western civilization. We have to overturn all values, and we can only do that with an annihilation of the old values. Okay, so he was, honest and, a Marxist, kind of pseudo-intellectualism stuff. But there, at least, you have the agenda straightforward, so you can understand what's going on. Rachel Maddow is able to, have the buzzwords like racism, Holocaust denier, anti, so she doesn't have to make a clear statement. That's why it's actually quite useful to go back and to read like Frankfurt School and even like the authoritarian personality, because you're getting a much cleaner, much clearer description of actually what's happening today.
Yeah, I guess back then, in the turmoil in the aftermath of the First World War and the collapse of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, that you had this cabal of Jews able to seize power in Hungary, and they got ahead of themselves, and he was chased out, and the regime fell in a matter of weeks because people weren't going to
Right,
have it.
exactly
Yeah,
right. And they
same thing
for
in
some
Germany,
reason,
and the same thing in Germany in 1919, with their
exact same thing. And it was the same
the Freikorps coming, shut them
kind
all
of a
down. Yeah.
psychological collection of individuals, that were everywhere. But it didn't work then, and so then the march through the institutions occurred, and now here we are with the same complete degenerate pedagogy in the public schools that they tried to hoist in 1919, and 100 years later they're getting away with it because they have, by their march through the institution, they also march through the ethnicities, and they dissolve the ethnicities that could have resisted this: the Irish Catholics, the Italian Catholics, even the like kind of Anglo-Saxon Protestants. All of this was shattered, so that then the pornographic male, the single mom, and the feminist mom, they aren't in a position that they can really, have a response to it that's meaningful, because they are individuals. They are not a collection of people. They're not a group. So, the regeneration of ethnicity, as suggested in the statement by the group that came to the Trump rally, which Rachel Maddow took umbrage with, is really an important thing, and it's something that should, it's a discussion that should happen, for sure.
It's interesting she'd take time to even call it out, given such a marginal political group. It means that just how much impact they can have just by doing that,
She just wants to gen up the racism energy, and it's she's She is just such a miserable, lying human being. It's incredible that she's actually on the air.
Well, like
Someone
I
who.
said, if maintaining a white majority is bad, why is that bad? What's wrong with white people?
Yeah,
What's wrong with
why?
white
What
people?
is wrong with white people? And I mean, again, I'll bring up the, my point that, isn't this a goal of the state of Israel? I mean, aren't you a big supporter of that? I mean, where isn't this hypocritical of you? Let's have a discussion about that, Rachel. That would be an interesting show.
Yeah, I want the Israeli Knesset to pass a resolution de declaring the United States is not a racist country.
Right. So,
And I,
anyway.
when I go there, I want 30 standing ovations like Herzog, President Herzog got from our Congress.
God Almighty. That
So,
was just pathetic.
and Gerald Nadler holding up an Israeli flag. It's like.
I thought, if you ever saw the videos of it, I thought he was going to faint, because he was standing up so much. He was, at that time, he was so fat that he couldn't really stand up quickly. And I thought at one point he was just going to keel over. That would have been a kind of a fitting conclusion to all that.
Why even bother? Like I said, I think it was Ramsey Paul said, why even bother having U.S. Congress? Why don't you just have the Israeli Knesset run pass laws for us now? Because
Well,
that's
I
what it's
mean,
like.
it would, the sad that he's absolutely right, because that would be a more honest political disclosure. I mean, here we have the illusion of democracy, but we don't see the oligarchic control, or it's easier and easier to see, but they're always trying to hide it from us.
Yep. So, okay, Joe. Great
Somehow,
talk.
yeah, it was good talking to your brother, and we'll get him next week.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too, bye-bye.